calling all musicians, bands, songwriters, and music producers. If you need somebody to review a contract, draft up an agreement, or just have your back in a negotiation, contact me, music attorney Randy Ojeda. I've negotiated record label deals, publishing and management deals, sync licensing deals, and so much more. So find out what my firm can do for your music career. Head to randyojedalaw.com and book a consultation now. Welcome to Cigar City Radio. I'm your host, Randy Ojeda, and making the magic happen, a man with a tomate on his shirt, Mr. Jason Solanas.
You ever eat something that sticks to your teeth, and when you try to get it out, it makes the same sound that'll really...
I know that sound well, sir.
Our guest on this episode is Bridget Kearney, a founding member of Lake Street Dive and writer of some of their most enduring songs. Iowa-born and Brooklyn-based, Kearney is known for writing smart, unexpected lyrics and melodies. She is also an adjunct professor at Princeton University, where she teaches songwriting. Her new solo album, Comeback Kid, is out April 12th on Keeled Scales.
So here it is, Bridget Kearney. So we're with Bridget Kearney from Lake Street Dive. So, okay. All right. Now we're cooking with gas. So yeah, we were supposed to see Lake Street Dive at Gasparilla Music Festival. But there was an illness or something. Is everything okay with the band?
Everything's great. Yeah. We just, you know, Rachel came down with a kind of a nasty, there was a lot of things going on. I won't go into too many details, but not in a good condition to be on stage singing for people. Not much coming out of her mouth. So,
that sounds rough.
Yeah. Happens sometimes, sadly.
You know, unfortunately, we weren't able to see the show, but hopefully the band will come back at some point and, you know, we'll get another chance to see the group.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what we're here to talk about today, of course, is your new record, Comeback Kid. It's out April 12th on Keeled Scales, one of my favorite labels. And
nice.
So I've been listening to the singles. I actually got an advanced copy of the record, you know, so ooh. I've been listening to the record itself. But I've become obsessed with Obsessed, and
nice,
you know, just really listening to all the tunes and love the sound. So let's tell me a little bit about Comeback Kid. Why a solo record? Why now? You know, how did it come together?
Yeah, I this is my third solo record. So for the last 10 years or so, it's been something that I kind of just do in my spare time. For me, it's kind of like creativity and making things is like a muscle where like, it's not like once you have a certain amount of output, you've like exhausted your resources and you're out. It's more like if you keep doing it, then you get stronger and you're kind of like more in shape to like just make the next thing. So yeah, I like to be just like continuously in a flow of working on music and making music in different forms, and especially like wearing different hats in that process, I think like opens up my ears a lot and helps me when I jump back into Lake Street Dive or when I jump into another situation producing or writing with someone else, then I've just kind of like continually growing and expanding on the sounds that I like am interested in and know how to make. So yeah, the Comeback Kid was something I started working on maybe around 2021, writing the songs for this. And of course, during that time, there was like extra time off the road, thanks to the COVID pandemic. So that was actually a very fertile creative time. I was in these like songwriting groups, virtual songwriting groups at that time that were like kind of accountability, but also just inspiration oriented, where like you would have to write a song every day for 7 days and you send it to the group. And then each morning a playlist would go out that included all the songs that everybody had written the day before.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So it was really amazing. Like, especially in a time of extreme isolation, like to be able to wake up each day and make your coffee and listen to like all this creative output that had just been made the day before by other people in their own spaces. Yeah. So that was like, I'd say half of the record kind of started at that time, and then got in the studio with one of my favorite producers, Dan Malad, and made that first half, and then had that to kind of like gesticulate on, you know, listen to, think about what else the record wanted to make it feel complete and kind of write towards that.
That's amazing. I love the songwriter group. I think that's a really cool concept. You know, when I haven't written a song in a long time, but when I used to do songwriting, me and some friends would do like songwriter games where it's like, okay, you have to write a song about Han Solo or, you know, something like that, or a song that mentions this thing. And then, you know, kind of see the different ways that people would create, you know, within those kind of parameters, you know.
Totally. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like it's all about just getting the ball rolling, just like going down a path and ignoring the parts of your brain that say like, stop, it's not good. Stop, it's ridiculous to write a song about Han Solo.
Yeah.
You know, just like power through that. And you might find your way to something like profound that you didn't know was there, you know?
It's very cool. It's very cool. So, I mean, you're kind of the expert here, because not only are you writing songs for your own solo career, but you're, you know, one of the main songwriters for Lake Street Dive. And you also teach songwriting at Princeton University. Is that correct?
I do. Yeah. I teach a class called How to Write a Song. That's for mostly beginners.
Okay.
And because there's no real like prereqs for the class. It's not like you have to audition or anything. But it's just people that are stoked about like figuring out how to do it. And so, yeah, it's really fun to like, again, just kind of like welcome people into that world and say like, you can do it. Like you can write, and they write a song each week, and it's in the middle of like the rest of their insane class schedule. They're usually taking four or five other classes on like microbiology or something, you know, whatever else they're studying. And then they manage to get a song done every week.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's also been like super inspiring. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you start teaching there? Like where did that come from?
I was invited to teach the class by Paul Muldoon, who is an amazing poet. He's from Ireland. He's been teaching at Princeton for the last probably 40 years. And the department that the class is in is called the Atelier. It was started by Toni Morrison, who was teaching there at the time. And she, from what I know, it was kind of like the idea was to start a department that was like these special classes that were bringing in people from the arts that are sort of outside of the world of academia and more in the professional world. So that's kind of where I come in. Like, you know, I don't have any teaching degrees or like master's or PhD, which is kind of what usually requires you to get in the door at like academic
Princeton,
institutions.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have a lot of experience just existing in the professional world of being a musician for the last 20 years, whatever. So that's how I got in.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. So, okay. So I'm going to put you on the spot here. So teach me, if I'm trying to write a song, or I'm trying to get better as a songwriter, like where should I start?
I would start with something that's true.
Okay.
Something that's like potent, you know, like go through your text messages with your best friend, or just like a conversation that you've had recently, and like find the thing that you cared about most in that conversation and use that as sort of like a jumping off point for the song, and then quickly abandon it. Like forget about what the like strict truth of the experience was, and just remember the feeling. because like you can write a better song that's based on that feeling and then fictionalizing like to a degree that's like better than the truth than if you're like too rigid with your biographical details, just because like if you're trying to write a bunch of songs or even one song, like you're kind of relying on fate to like lead you to a story that's really, really good. And like, sometimes, you know, you might not have like all of the details of that story that are perfect for your song, but you have the feeling, and the feeling is the thing that's like gonna kind of be your, you know, lighthouse, like just keep guiding towards that. But wherever you, whatever interesting, meandering paths you can take along the way are going to help out.
That's amazing. So take something from your life, remove the context, and kind of, you know, boil it down to that individual feeling.
So like a song on my record, like Security Camera, like that came from like some real, a real conversation about like seeing security cameras all around Brooklyn, New York, and thinking, oh wow, they're like really getting an eyeful. Like there's a lot of stuff going on that's not necessarily like what they're intended for. They're there to like capture criminals in the act of committing a crime, but they're also getting all this other footage of like, you know, people falling in love, like
Breaking up, you know,
people breaking up. Just like any of these like vivid, wonderful or terrible moments in our lives are probably captured. Anyways, so then I try to think like, wow, that's really interesting to me. And like, what are these moments in my life that I wish I could live over and over again on repeat? And then you kind of like verse one is one moment from one part of my life, and verse two is another moment from another part of my life that like they're not actually connected, and there's details in the song that are like not exactly what happened to me, but it's the feeling. It's like it gets the point across better than my own biographical details would.
That's cool. You know, so Security Camera was one of the first singles off the record, right? And you know, I've been listening to that one as well. And it definitely, it's like you're talking about, you know, different significant moments in your life, you know, but it comes across. So what's the word I'm looking for? Like it's relatable, you know, like it's not, and I guess that goes back to the songwriting lesson you just told us, is that you're not getting specific about exactly the context of these moments, but you're capturing that feeling. So that's really cool.
It's fun. I like to write a song.
So what were some other inspirations for the record of Comeback Kid? First off, like where did the name Comeback Kid come from?
Comeback Kid came from a song that's on the record. It's the last song. And it was one of the earlier songs that I wrote that I thought could be a contender for this record. And then just that as a title kind of like spoke to me as something that could possibly just be a captivating album title, but also in some ways like summarize certain themes of the record. I think like Comeback Kid has some element of like perseverance, like you're enduring some struggles and like just continuing to try to get to the other side. And then it also has, of course, not just Comeback, but Kid in the title, which I think is like maybe just there's an element of like nostalgia in the record. And so like something that's childlike or that's still kind of finding its way to maturity is in there as well. And then specifically that song, Comeback Kid, I think there's some like, you know, songwriter craft nerdery in it that's like satisfying to me, where the word comeback is like used in a bunch of different ways. Like The first line is, "What would I say if I saw you again? Would I say the jerk store called and they're running after and they're running out of you?"
Yeah,
which is it's a quote from Seinfeld.
From Seinfeld, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So like George has this lunch where somebody like insults him, and he was without words to respond. And then he's just like ruminating on this for weeks afterwards, like, man, I should have thought of the perfect thing to say in that moment.
Yeah.
And then he eventually like creates the scenario, forces the scenario to happen again so that he can like say his perfect comeback that
the
he
perfect
thought.
Comeback. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that kind of, gotcha like insult comeback is one way, and then there's also like the sports version is you know, in verse two where it says Hail Mary,
yeah,
you know, I'm just like doing something ridiculous to like try to save this relationship that's like obviously failing, you know.
Yeah
And then in the chorus, it says, "I'm the comeback kid. You know that I can't quit. Just saying, come back, come back, come back to me." So that's kind of like the third iteration of how that word is used in that song.
Yeah. So it's a number of meanings. It's like multiple. You're really, yeah. That's, I see the songwriter trickery going on there.
Yeah. This is just like, I get a kick out of this stuff.
Yeah. So who are some of your songwriting influences specifically? Like, I think I can piece out some of the musical influences, but I'm just curious who inspired you as a songwriter?
Boy, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time, I guess, answering that because it's always, I'm more the kind of listener where I just like get into one song at a time and listen to it over and over again. So it depends on the season. I don't know. I mean, that kind of wordplay kind of thing, I don't even know where my big influences are. Like musically, I mean, the Beatles, like Elliott Smith, Wilco, Joni Mitchell, Anderson .Paak. Yeah, I don't know. This is like the hardest question to answer.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough one. I'm definitely putting you on the spot there. And, you know, I hate when people ask me for like my creative influences as well. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. But Anderson .Paak is interesting. You know, because I definitely hear the Beatles and Joni Mitchell and some of those influences, and Elliott Smith too, but Anderson .Paak I was not expecting.
Yeah, I think maybe like Not a Game to Me is a song that, or In the Morning, which is towards the end of the record, like is probably where you would hear some of that influence, like in terms of groove and just like song form.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's just so incredible.
Yeah. No, I see that. So, you know, I know that the album has a lot of like, I'm kind of a gear nerd. So the album has a lot of like vintage synth sounds, you know, throughout the record. Is that something that, was that like Dan Molad's influence, or is that something that you brought to the table and you said you wanted to use, you know, certain synths or certain sounds? Like, how did that come together?
A little bit of both. Like, I ended up right before COVID lockdown with a bunch of synths in my apartment because a friend of mine had just recently moved out of his apartment and was planning to sort of float for a while, maybe do some traveling, and then sublet from me when I'm on tour, which is, you know, usually about half the year. So
yeah,
that was our grand scheme, was that he was going to move a bunch of his studio gear into my basement and we would kind of share the space whenever I was away. And then of course, you know, the pandemic happened, and so I was at home much more than expected, and found myself with all this gear.
Yeah. There are worse problems to have, I think.
There are worse problems. It was terrible timing for Robin, but good timing in a way for me. And so, yeah, I was just kind of like experimenting with those, like some of the songs, again, using security camera as an example, just like it starts with that synth riff, boom, doom, 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 you know, and that's just because that was what I had lying around and was like playing with. And then when I sent those demos to Dan, I think that was probably like helpful for him to get a sense for what kind of sounds I was hearing. And he's fully a wizard with those things, both Dan and the two engineers that we worked with, John Joseph and Rob Shelton.
Oh yeah. Shout out to John Joseph. Yeah. I know him. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He's great and really knows his way around dialing up sounds on those kind of things and just like making them really sing.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I definitely think the record has a great, like, warm vintage sound, which you know, you don't hear as much in records, you know, but it's still, you know, it still sounds new and modern, but just those, you know, classic real synths, you know, it doesn't sound like it's patched in like audio, you know, synth. Like, it sounds like what it apparently is real synthesizers. You know?
Yeah. What I really like about Dan's production is like he manages to make everything sound modern. Like even I think if he was mixing just like a piano and a voice, he would like be able to use these kind of like full spectrum hi-fi sounds to make something like classic sound super modern.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really fun to hear like those synths, but mixed through the lens of Malad.
Yeah. The lens of Malad. Yeah. That could be another album title. Yeah. Very cool. Yep. So what's the plan for this record? It comes out April 12th on Keeled Scales. Is there going to be a tour in support of it, or what's next?
There is. Yeah. There's going to be 12 dates or so, and I've already done a couple shows around the single releases. My concept for this album release is to use all local musicians or regionally local. So I did a show in LA with like all LA musicians and a show in Nashville with all Nashville musicians. And it's just a really fun way for me to kind of reach out to musicians that I've gotten to know through being in the music industry for a while, like that I've, you know, seen play. We kind of like admired each other from afar. And then it's like finally time to be like, let's take this to the next level. Let's like play some music together.
Yeah.
And so far it's been amazing. And the other fun thing is like, because the band is different on all the shows, like it just gives each show its own kind of life force and freshness. For example, I did the show in Nashville a couple weeks ago, and the Nashville band included a pedal steel player. Spencer Cullum is his name. Wow. And there's like not really any pedal steel on the record.
But I was going to say something.
Yeah, you just throw it to the band and say like, I don't know, here are the parts, like see whatever you can pull out of it, go for it.
Yeah.
And he slayed it. He sounded so good. And like we had one long rehearsal and then just did the gig. And so like on the gig, myself and the rest of the band are just like hearing things that are still brand new to us. And so it's really a great energy to have on stage and super exciting.
That's so fun. And it's awesome for the listeners too, who get to hear kind of a new take on the record and the songs. That's really cool.
Yeah. I think it's selfishly like the most fun for me because I'm the only one who will get to hear all the shows.
Yeah. That's good. Well, you should record them and then, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Trying to get at least some, you know, phone videos and stuff of all of them. But I think that energy like translates to the audience. Even if they're not hearing all the shows, just the fact that the people on stage are really pumped about what's going on, like I think definitely is important.
Yeah. So how are you kind of coordinating all that? It seems like I was a band manager for a while, so I know like it's like tough to get musicians in the room, and then are you rehearsing these sets? Are you just like going at it and just performing and seeing what happens? Like, what are you doing?
So that is there are pros and cons to this approach. And yeah. It's definitely like labor intensive and kind of risky, because yeah. you don't know until the day of the show whether it's going to be good or not. I mean,
I'm sure it'll be good. I mean, it sounds like you're working with some high quality musicians here, you know? Yeah.
Yes. Very, very extremely lucky in that regard. And so, but it's super fun to kind of scheme about like what would be a good combination of musicians for each show. The shows that we're doing in around the Northeast are going to be with, I think, I know there's going to be two guitarists on it, Will Grafe and Adam Brisbane. My concept for those is to have no synths, no keys. And so it's more going to be like handing off the role of like doing synth esque sounds to either of those two guitar players, and they're both like really expansive sound artists on the guitar. So that's the idea for that particular set of shows. So yeah, it's really fun to just kind of like imagine how it might go, and then I made like very detailed charts for each song with like chords and forms, and like here are the specific melodies that I want you to play. Here's where you can do your own thing. So that was kind of like felt like a part of the important part of the job too. It was just like figuring out how to explain to people what the songs are, and then send them a record and then see how it sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. And just kind of letting people interpret the parts the way they, you know, they see fit, I guess.
Yeah. Some of this stemmed from a tour that I did in the fall, opening for Margaret Glaspie. And tour, I did most of the show solo, but I did Nashville with a Nashville band and New York with a New York band. And I was like, whoa, this is so fun to get to hear the songs so differently. Yeah. And then I did this video for the song Don't Think About the Polar Bear. Mm-hmm. From this record.
Yeah, that was the first single, right? Don't Think About the Polar Bear.
Yeah, that was kind of like a holiday-ish, like pre-album announced single. Mm. And invited a bunch of friends in to make a like in-studio video of that. And there was maybe 6 or 7 piece band. None of us had played together before. We all put on matching turtlenecks, played the song 5 times, picked a take, mixed it. Videoed it. It was done by 6 p.m. And it was just like so cool.
Amazing.
To like, yeah, again, just hear everybody in the moment, like coming up with their parts and refining things. And yeah.
Yeah, that's right on. So you mentioned you're in Brooklyn now. That's where you live. Like, how long have you lived in Brooklyn?
I think about 15 years now.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's a long time to live in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Are there any like particular venues that you like to go and check out in New York? I know it's constantly changing. Things are closing and opening there. So what are kind of your spots, you know?
Yeah. Well, I like to go to Bar Lunatico. Did you ever go there?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in Bed-Stuy. They have a bunch of incredible music like every night of the week. And it's small, intimate. Like, those are some of my favorite New York venues, are the ones where you can sit 10 feet away and it's always like just mind-blowing world-class musicians, but you can you know, be almost practically on stage with them.
That's one of the things I love about New York shows is it's like, you know, there's not a lot of space for big venues unless you're talking like Music Hall of Williamsburg or something, you know, so it's nice to, you know, see some intimate performances.
Yeah. So I saw a show there last week, and, you know, I would put like Sonny's and Barbez in that category too, of like small intimate venues. But I like to go to the big shows too. I went to see Brittany Howard's show last week at Webster.
Oh, yeah.
unbelievable.
Yeah, like, amazing new record.
Live shows I've ever seen. Yeah, and I saw Joe Lovano at the Village Vanguard the other night. Like,
nice.
Harkening back to my jazzer youth days.
Yeah.
sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's just like really an embarrassment of wealth of music going on here at all times.
Yeah, no, that's the best part about New York is, yeah, there's so many amazing musicians that, yeah, you can catch a great show at a small spot, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some amazing sets at like Pete's Candy Store, which is like not much bigger than my office right here, you know. So it's
totally.
Yeah, it's a great place to be. Well, very cool. So where can people find you if they want to connect with Bridget?
I guess probably the best place would be Instagram, like at Bridget Carney Music, and you know, I'll post about shows and stuff there. You can also reach out and say hey. And yeah, that's kind of a fun outlet for me to do, just like sharing whatever kind of shows I'm seeing around New York, or if I'm like producing something, or like tonight I'm playing a show with my friend Alwyn at a little club called Come On Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Great spot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, it's fun. Yeah. I like to do like local gigs when I'm here too. And yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, definitely follow Bridget on the socials. On Instagram. And are you a story person? Are you posting to your story a lot?
I do. I'm posting the stories. I'll be posting out.
All right. So yeah, we'll see. You know, you're set tonight at Come On Everybody. Of course, this won't air for a couple weeks. So by then the Come On Everybody show will be long gone. So
all good.
But follow Bridget for more musical details. And hopefully we'll see Lake Street Dive back in Tampa, maybe, you know, next year at Gasparilla Music Festival or another festival or something in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, we were sorry to miss that one.
Yeah, there was a lot of people.
I heard I think, there was a good replacement, Killer Mike and Big Boy.
Killer Mike and Big Boy, which I think is like kind of the musical opposite of Lake Street Dive. So definitely a different crowd came out Sunday night than I think would have for y'all. So
yeah, it was interesting to see the socials responses. There was definitely some people that were like, glow up.
Yeah.
No, really, I think, about it.
Yeah, I think either way, it would have been a phenomenal, you know, end to the festival. So like I said, hopefully maybe we'll get you next year or some other time in the future. You know, if you come through Tampa, let us know. We'll do what we can.
Yeah, I just went to see my podiatrist.